This episode of the Craftsman Online podcast is sponsored by Bricks Masons. From elegant Masonic rings that showcase your commitment to our craft, to finely crafted regalia and apparel that honor your tradition, Bricks Masons delivers quality and craftsmanship that truly stands out. Shop now at BricksMasons.com and use promo code CRAFTSMAN to receive free shipping with your first order.
The comments, opinions, and views shared during this program are of those individual Freemasons and do not reflect the official position of a Grand Lodge, Concordant Body, Appendant Body, Masonic Authority, or CraftsmanOnline.com. Welcome to the Craftsman Online Podcast, the only 5-star rated Masonic podcast endorsed by the Grand Lodge of New York.
Hello, it's Brother Michael Arce, co-founder of CraftsmanOnline.com. You've joined us for a crossover episode on the Freemasons podcast as we bring in the host of the Freemasons podcast, Right Worshipful George Mudry. Welcome to the Craftsman Online podcast, my brother.
Thank you.
Does it feel different when it's just you and you don't have the co-hosts and your partners with you?
When I do a podcast just by myself, It's a little bit more difficult because I have to kind of come up with my own material. And one of my biggest things that I had a problem with and struggled with was my use of I would always say um. And initially I started editing it out when I would record by myself because I don't ever listen to any of my own material. I don't listen to any podcasts, but I don't listen to my own especially because I hate the way I talk. I'm very critical of myself. So Joe and Ken are here. It's a lot easier. It flows. It's more of a conversation rather than me just giving an infomercial, if you will.
That's one of the things that, you know, I really like about it is that it's that authentic, real in the moment feel. Like if you've got a lodge and you're fortunate enough to have a bar in the lodge, these are the conversations. This is how brothers talk after the meeting. In the meeting, of course, we are stuffy with our old English and our ritual and very construct and form where we are, but outside of lodge, we're dudes and we're talking about real life. And that's crossed over into your podcast, which I think is appealing because there's enough of podcasts out there that provide that light or the deeper thought or the this or the that. And that's what yours is, just that splash of brotherhood, I would say.
For me, the whole Masonic experience, it's not what you do in lodge.
Mm.
It's part of it. It's what happens after lodge. That's also part of it too. That's your fellowship. That's you know, the lodge meeting is not just your 7 to 9:30 or whatever. It's what happens afterward too. It's the conversations you're having with your brothers and getting to know them. And that's what makes the brotherhood, is getting to know their lives and their children and their, you know, their jobs. And that's part of the Masonic experience as well. Not just, you know, standing there and repeating ritual. You know, the ritual part of it to me is a conduct of how you're to act, you know, to the profane world, and by that, or the outside world. I don't even know if I like the word profane, but
I always think it's that they're swearing or something, like they're illiterates. You know, I don't like that we use that word.
It's like, you know, going into Dunkin' Donuts and giving the cashier part of my French because they gave you the wrong change back. Like, So you're acting an act in front of everybody, but you got a Masonic tattoo in your arm.
Yep.
That's your conduct. That's what the ritual is telling you not to do. When you're behind closed doors up in lodge in the back room, smoking a cigar and drinking a beer and having a good time, you get what I'm saying? Like, just let your hair down, if you will. And that's part of the Masonic experience as well. And I think that it was important when I did the podcast when I started the podcast, even now, people who want to join Freemasonry need to understand that. And I believe Masons should also understand that as well. I've talked about my lodge. When I first came in, all the members were over 70. I was 26.
You were a very young man.
I was young. I was the only one.
That's a lonely place too. Very lonely.
And I basically said, this lodge is dying. You're a good guy. You've been my friend for, it was my brother, worship brother, Phil. You know, we brought in younger guys and we're where we are now. We brought life back to the craft. I am at a point now where I've pretty much stepped away. And I flourish. And I think that's important for a past master or the older brethren. And I consider myself an older brethren. Doesn't, you don't have to be an age, it could be an experience. When the lodge is moving on its own and you don't need to be there anymore, let it go. Go and enjoy it. Let them figure out, let the younger guys figure out what needs to be done next.
They're never going to know how to do something unless they get a chance to do it. It's kind of our job to set them up and teach them the way that it's done, the process. And then, as you said, the important lesson is take a step back. And I think, yeah, a lot of brothers suffer with that. They get burnout, they get frustrated, they get bitter to a certain extent, and then you wonder why they stop coming. I've always, you know, as someone that's watched the chairs rotate, I'm like, how come the immediate past masters like immediately never come back to lunch for like 2 or 3 years? Why is that?
I've done it. It's the Masonic vacation, I call it. After you get out of the big chair, or whether it's a district deputy or a master, you're like, yeah, I'm good. I'm going on vacation for a little while. But the trick is, though, when they go on that Masonic vacation, how do you get them back?
So, Brother George, I want to get back to the podcast, because one of the bits that you guys do that hooked me as a listener early on was the alternate universe. And as you said, like, this podcast is meant for men that are interested in getting in Masonry. And a lot of the times, what I think one of the things that draws the attention to Freemasonry is all this conspiracy theory. So basically, your alternate universe is like the ultimate, like, what if game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And normally when you guys play this, I imagine it's like a Jeopardy like screen where they're category boop, boop, boop. And then you spin a wheel and it lands on something. And then that's the episode. That's where you go.
Yes and no. So one, I'll admit I'm a huge dork. And I like watching movies, and I'm watching the Purge movie and I'm like, I wonder what would happen in a Masonic lodge. I mean, is that where we just figure out who's gonna buy the dinner next? Is that how
like the ultimate purge?
You know, I'm watching a movie and I popped into my head, I'm like, I wonder how Masons would act if this was an actual thing. And that's why I need to have an alternate universe. I need to, you know, we're gonna play a game of like, what if this actually happened? And that's how it started.
It's a cool thought sandbox that you guys have created. So I brainstormed, me and my staff of one. I got 5 topics. I haven't shared any of these with you. And I'll let you determine how you want to play the game. I can share all 5 topics. We can bang them out. I'll list all 5 of them. You pick the one that's most appealing to you or gets a laugh, however you want to play.
Do them all. Why not? If I choose one, then I'm going to be driving home going, damn it, what were the other ones?
So topic number one, this is probably the lightest, most fun one. The alternate reality is Freemasons are secretly controlling the world one pancake breakfast at a time.
All right. So we're going full Alex Jones on me here. Okay. Oof. This is a good one. So if we were controlling everything, our lodge can't figure out what the hell they're having for the next freaking meal. So I find it highly unlikely to be all symbiotic and everything would be peaches and rainbows and whatnot. I don't think it would be at a Blue Lodge level. And I'll say this because, you know, for those, I don't know if you have listeners abroad, but again, the United States Masonic Grand Lodges are not set up like anywhere else. Every Grand Lodge is standalone. I don't think you would get you'd have to have some sort of a Grand Lodge of the United States of America, which George Washington many, many, many years ago put a squash to. So, and I don't think you'd get all the Grand Masters together to figure out who's going to run this whole goat rodeo, because, I mean, we have state Grand Lodges that don't get along with one another for a multitude of reasons. Connecticut was one of the first to endorse Prince Hall. We were the first to endorse Prince Hall. There's some Grand Lodges that don't. Scottish Rite level? Potentially, because you have Northern and Southern Masonic jurisdiction. But Northern and Southern jurisdictions didn't work out too well in 1860. So I don't know if that's 1860, you know, Civil War, you know. So I don't know if Scottish Rite would be able to pull it off. So if I was to make somebody's controlling it all, it would have to be the Grand Encampment of Knights Templar, because they're the only organization in Freemasonry that is the entire country. Shriners, they don't get along too fast in their cars, so that's not gonna. I'm joking.
Be the world's largest drinking party.
I mean, Congress would be fun with all the clowns going on their nose. As for controlling the country, that's a tough one because you would have to revamp the entire government in a sense because it's close. There are some similarities between the U.S. government and Masonic ritual and Masonic conduct or within Lodge. But it is totally different. We are a democratic republic. A Masonic lodge, I jokingly refer to as a dictatorship. Could it happen? No. Could it have happened in 1943 to 1945 when you had two sitting presidents that were 33rd degree Masons and, you know, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Harry Truman? I mean, the U.S. was at the height of its power and peak. That in the time it would have happened, in my personal opinion. So in modern day, no, not going to happen.
Good answer. Good answer. Second alternate universe, we travel a little bit further back in time. What if the Americans lost the Revolutionary War?
It would have been terrible because I don't like tea. I'm a coffee guy. we lost the Revolutionary War. I mean,
Masonically speaking, I think some of the problem that we have with the grand jurisdictions may or may not be ironed out because we'd all be under the United Grand Lodge of England, perhaps.
Right. I mean, if we lost the American Revolutionary War, you obviously would have had the founding fathers and the first Congress of, who were many of them Masons and Washington's generals.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have been gone.
Yep.
So I think, I mean, it would have been a trickle down effect. I mean, we have lodges here in Connecticut, and I'm sure in New York too, where we had founding fathers create lodges. I mean, we when Hiram in New Haven, founding fathers were on that charter. One of them was scratched off. We'll leave that one to interpretation. It's the man we don't speak of. He was a traitor, but his name was scratched off or ink blotted out, I think it was. But I think you'd have a lot of lodges that were created after the war by founding fathers that would not be in existence. I think ultimately, Masonry would still be the same. I mean, our ritual would be different. Our grips and signs would be different. Because if you've ever met anybody from England, I don't know what. They do totally different things. So I think our ritual would be different. But I think ultimately we'd still be okay. We'd be all right.
Hey, it's Brother Michael Arce for Bricks Masons. The Craftsman Online podcast is now sponsored by Bricks Masons. They're my favorite destination for all the Masonic needs I have. And for you, it could be Masonic apparel, maybe something nice for yourself, or a unique gift idea for a brother. I want to talk to you about the coolest, genuine leather bag you're ever going to see. Imagine being able to bring this into the office, just $150.99 at BricksMasons.com. It is the Master Mason Blue Lodge briefcase. This thing is beautiful. And I know it's going to fit my MacBook Pro in here because it's over 16 inches wide, full grain, genuine leather that is laser engraved. Yes, you can personalize this with your name and lodge number right there. You got a zip on the back pocket, a cool leather handle. You are going to look like a professional Mason on the go with your new Master Mason Blue Lodge briefcase. See it now at BricksMasons.com. Visit BricksMasons.com and explore their extensive catalog and elevate your Mason experience with style and substance. Plus, for our podcast listeners, use promo code CRAFTSMAN at checkout to enjoy free shipping with your first order. Hey, it's Brother Michael Arce. If you're enjoying this episode, I bet you'd enjoy it a lot more if you got to hear it early. And without this, the annoying commercials that come before, during, and after the Craftsman Online podcast, you can avoid all this and help out our show by just pledging $5 a month on Patreon and become a Craftsman Online podcast member. You get early access to weekly episodes, an ad-free listening experience, plus we get extra time with a lot of our guests featuring this one, even Brother George. You know, he's going to go pretty deep on some of his thoughts when it comes to Freemasonry and beyond. And coming soon, we're going to also be introducing you with virtual meet and greets with some of our favorite podcast guests. This is all just $5 a month. My brothers and friends, it's a great way to support the show. Know that all of the money we collect goes to support the production costs of producing the weekly episodes of the Craftsman Online podcast. And we thank you in advance. Alternate universe where everything Dan Brown has written about when it comes to Freemasonry is true.
All right. So if we're talking Lost Symbol, I want that guy. I want the guy's tattoos. That was the villain in that book. I mean, he had Jacob and Boaz on the legs. He had the crown on his head. He was the eagle on his back and all kinds of. And I'm reading the book. I'm like, that's so cool. I want to spend like $30,000 right now on tattoos. But if everything was real. So the Dan Brown books, Da Vinci Code, are we talking about, or are we talking specifically about Lost Symbol? Just to give a spoiler alert, brief synopsis of the book, it's about a Robert Langdon comes in, he's investigating the hand of mysteries that was left in the center of the rotunda of the Capitol, trying to figure out the symbols. They end up going to a chamber of reflection downstairs, and they discover this little pyramid that's like a codex thing. And I can't remember exactly what he was after, but it was basically a guy who was a Mason that bought his way, made a large donation and bought his way into the 33rd degree, which we as Masons know right off the bat that that's not accurate. That's a complete falsehood. You can't buy your way into anything in Freemasonry, with the exception is if you make a large donation to the Knights Templar Eye Foundation, you get the Sword of Honor. There's my plug. but you can't buy yourself into the 33rd degree. As a matter of fact, to my understanding, when I've talked to, I'm a 32nd degree, but when I've asked about the 33rd degree, they're like, shh, don't, we don't talk about it. Like, don't ask what it's about. Don't, because you'll never see it. It's an honorary degree that's given to you. If this, the villain in the book, if he actually joined Freemasonry, I'm pretty sure he'd be rooted out in the investigation committee within the first 5 minutes. You don't join Masonry for malicious intent and personal gain. Like, if you do, don't bother, because you're going to be sadly disappointed. There's no money. There's no insurance policies. There's nothing that's going to better your station in life. You do this voluntarily to help others, not yourself.
The Dan Brown universe wouldn't exist. Here's your next question. Number four, alternate universe situation. The great architect of the universe is really Quato from Total Recall.
That's good.
Can I tell you, this was the moment I was waiting for. I didn't want to show you what the list was, because as my fingers were typing this, I'm giggling like a squeak.
Well, I mean, I guess I should open my mind.
Yes.
Oh, but who would be the host of it? Like, who would be Quato's host, though? I'm going to go with Joe. I mean, he's always wearing baggy long shirts. Like, he's always... and realistically, it was Ken. I mean, the minute he took his shirt off to go out in the sun, the quad would burst into flames. So if Quato was real, oh boy.
In that scenario, it's a lot like our Hiramic legend, where it's an allegory, I believe, in an allegory, because Quato represents something. But then when you find out, was the whole experience that Schwarzenegger's character went through real or not? Was he dreaming? Was it, you know? Man, that challenges everything. So what if this great architect is really this little alien thing that has a host body that is really just kind of a Yoda that is looks like chewing gum?
I mean, this opens like Pandora's box of like, who is God? You know, if this, I mean, we always talk about God from the heavens, and God came down and descended from the heavens, you know, I mean, you can go right into the Bible and say, when God said, let us create man in our image, who the hell was he talking to?
Mm.
I mean, I've done the Lost Book of Enki episodes, and I mean, the similarities between Sumerian culture and Christianity and Judaism, Buddhism, Islam is just, it's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're really questioning who's God. Like, if he was Quato, I mean... If you believe that little green men come down here and visit the planet and they're flying around in Tic Tacs and stuff, I guess anything's possible. Man, that would change our ritual, though. There definitely wouldn't be exposing the naked right and left breasts, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, I would just think like the answer would be different to whence came you. 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
that's a good one. That's kind of funny. God, I'm crying. That was funny. I don't know. We really don't know who God is, so
Well, you know, not to put a bug in there, but I just say, you know, future episode of the Freemasons podcast, I would be tuning in to find out what if Quato was really. You and I know this, and they would be hit upside the head, and that would be a fun one. All right, so here's also kind of a fun one, but I mean, talk about the roles being reversed. Alternate universe, what if Freemasonry is still the world's oldest sorority? And men are trying to seek admittance into lodges. So now Freemasonry, not the oldest fraternity, but now the oldest sorority. Roles reversed.
All right. So we're talking about this. I guess you're basically talking about this duality between should women be allowed into Freemasonry and or how would a man feel if there was a woman's only exclusive?
Well, no, the whole story is based on a female perspective. Now we're, as odd as it would be, we're trying to join a sorority because they have the answers that have been in our hearts that we're trying to seek. And we have to try to knock on the door and say, can men have a place in Freemasonry? Because it's really a sorority now.
It's a good one.
Total role reverse.
I can't speak on other men. I can only speak on myself. I'm not one of those people that believes everything needs to be all inclusive. What's good for you may not be good for him. What's good for me may not be good for you. You know what I mean? Like, for instance, I'm never going to get into Yale Skull and Bones. Why? Because I'm a dummy. I'm a jarhead. I'm not smart. So I can't feel impartial of how come I can't join. Like, I don't have the right credentials for it, nor would I even bother to ask. I would never want to join something that, you know, is... I mean, we're not talking about something that got started yesterday either, right? We're not talking about something that, like, I'm going to make a boys-only club and girls aren't allowed. Like, this isn't like Charlie Brown and, or, you know, this has been around and it's not a sexist thing. It's not our fraternity's been around for a very long time. 1700, I think, is 1707 is where the official first writings are. But we know, just like the mafia, they didn't just pop out of nowhere. Like, they were there beforehand. They just weren't recording it. So it's long. It's a tradition of and I think people need to not look at things that, like, they're so, everything's negative. It's not negative. It's just, this is something that's for us. And in case of this, if it was a sorority, I don't think men should be allowed because it's been a tradition for a long time. And I wouldn't even try to. It'd be really cool that women would have an organization like that exclusively for them. I think that would be great. I wish there was I don't know if co-masonry is specifically all women, right? It's men and women, right?
There are female masons and versions of female masonry where they still refer to each other as brother. And their ritual is, from what I understand, pretty close to what we would practice, but that's in England. And I know that there's some actual female Masonic bodies or organizations that are here in the US.
Right.
But yeah, I think and with you, I don't mean to jump in on your alternate universe. But
No, go ahead.
Like, I've heard many both pros and cons on both sides of the issue. Like, hey, why would this be good as far as advancing Freemasonry and preserving it for future generations? It would be a way to a possible solution to the membership decline if we let women in. And honestly, to me, not to sound sexist or as a jerk, I would just say, I don't know too many women who are knocking on the door, trying to beat down the door to become a Freemason. And I'm only speaking from my own personal experience, but I haven't met too many wives that when you ask or when you talk about going to lodge, their first question is, well, what time are you going to be home? That's usually the extent, at least in my house, as to what it comes with Freemasonry. Just as that, I've always made the statement that Freemasonry is not really right for every man, and every man's not really right for Freemasonry. We're talking about esoteric in the truest sense, that it's the smallest, selectest group that see the value in something and it's special to them because they see the value in it. Others don't understand it.
And then you could reverse or the way they are right now. Let's just talk about this. And I don't know what it is in your grand jurisdiction, but really the only thing that's really truly secretive here in Connecticut is the obligation. That's the true secret, is the obligation that you're not supposed to talk about. So if we're talking about investigated candidate, how do you investigate how do you invest or divest a female for the Master Mason degree?
Right. That was the one question I asked.
Now you have a room full of guys. Now you have a room full of guys with one female. I'm not saying that Masons aren't upstanding and right, but it could pose a serious problem legally and actually physically. There runs my problem. That's where things get really dicey. And what are you going to do? You're going to have legal. We don't do anything legal. I mean, we tell them get in the back room, get in the, into the prep room, and all right, strip your clothes off. And it's like, first they look at you like, what? And then 2 minutes later, they're like, okay. But there's no legal signing documents about like, oh, we're asking you. There's none of that stuff. It's a trust thing.
The first time I saw the outfit, costume, whatever the profane term is for it, I'm like, can we get back to the jokes about me riding a goat around the room? Because I'd rather do that than put on these pajamas. This is weird.
Yeah, right.
You're telling me George Washington walked around a room like this? Okay.
So I just feel that you're running into a whole plethora of new problems by allowing that, whether it's reversed in this alternate universe or not.
I kind of have the viewpoint that it would be a lot like the Wonder Woman movie where when Steve, you know, the pilot guy crashes and lands with, you know, Diana, the Wonder Woman at that time. And he's on the island of these amazing women that there's no man and the men are just kind of hunt down. And it's just that ultimate role reversal where we would just be like, you're talking about something, not you, but just we are talking about something larger than, hey, Freemasonry isn't a fraternity, it's a sorority. But kind of sadly for that to happen, just the outlook of traditional roles has also been reversed.
I would love to know how co-masonry does that. How do you do that? So now you have just the female going to the prep room with other females. Well, what if your co-lodge or your co-Freemasonry lodge is primarily all guys? Because I mean, we are all guys, you know? If you were to allow co-masonry, like, and a female came up here and was like, hey, I want to join your lodge. Well, how do you do that? It's a sticky situation that I feel, regardless if it's a fraternity or a sorority, it could pose a lot of extra stuff.
Yeah, and the other part of it is that I've always, you know, so we're talking about, I wonder what it would be like in co-masonry. Yeah. I wonder what it would be like, because their story, is it the same that we are following, like symbolically building King Solomon's temple? But what about all the other biblical lessons that are kind of introduced, or thoughts or concepts or ideas? Is it the same experience that we get? And what's the meaning to them? Like, does their third degree end the same way that ours does, with just this unfinished kind of end to a story that you kind of have to spin and figure out on your own? Like, what is it like? You know, I have a lot of questions. And do they serve green beans at dinner? Like, is that a common theme that would just run through? It doesn't matter.
Green beans and lemon chicken. Oh my God. The two things that will make me walk out of a lodge meeting before it even starts. Don't get me wrong, there's not wrong with lemon chicken, but when you've had it 15 times in a row for the last month, it's like, oh my God, can we just do something else? Can we get ribs or something?
This has been the Craftsman Online podcast. Big thanks to my guest, Right Worshipful George Mudry, the host of the Freemasons podcast, for coming on. If you've enjoyed our podcast and you want to hear more, you can tell Siri or Alexa to play the Craftsman Online podcast. We're available on all streaming platforms with new episodes every Monday morning. Until next time, let peace and harmony prevail.
The comments, opinions, and views shared during this program are of those individual Freemasons and do not reflect the official position of a Grand Lodge, Concordant Body, Appendant Body, Masonic Authority, or CraftsmanOnline.com. Welcome to the Craftsman Online Podcast, the only 5-star rated Masonic podcast endorsed by the Grand Lodge of New York.
Hey, it's Brother Michael Arce, co-founder of CraftsmanOnline.com. We've got some bonus time on our Subscriber Extra episode with Right Worshipful George Mudry, who's the host of the Freemasons podcast. George, thanks for making a little extra time for us.
I got nothing but time. It's Sunday. I got nothing going on. I mean, it's what time is there? It's 12:30. I mean, I went for a water and I ended up with a rolling rock because they didn't have any water.
How'd that happen?
Jeez. All good. How did that happen?
Well, I wanted to get in and talk about your podcast, the Freemasons podcast. You describe yourself as the quote unquote, this is not your typical Masonic podcast.
I was a past district deputy. I'm a has-been. I always make the joke. I'm a has-been. What do you do now? And so I'm like, well, I'm going to start a podcast. And it's not going to be geared toward Masons. My podcast, the podcast we do is not geared toward Masons. It's geared toward people who are thinking about joining Masonry. Not so much locally, but maybe worldwide. I can start to, and I even never thought I was going to go worldwide. I thought I was going to be, you know, regional. I wanted to do what I try to do my part as best I could to try to turn the tide of the decline in Masonry.
It's funny because I think everybody starts out that way that gets into podcasting is like, hey, I always advise people like, you know, your initial audience is going to be like three people, you, whoever the guest is, and maybe some stray rando on the internet that somehow finds you. And then from there, you start to see what you appeal to and you develop your audience and you kind of go with that flow. I want to get to your co-hosts, Joe and Ken. Like, how did they get involved and how did you say, hey, let's make this a show. Let's get together and start recording these episodes.
So we did an episode one day and I was good friends with Joe prior to, I mean, we were brothers obviously still, but we kind of clicked over a pretty nasty situation that happened in his lodge when I was district deputy. And we became friends, closer brothers through that. And, one day I just invited him up to the podcast and we did an episode and we used to do after hours episodes, which was, the normal episodes are like what it's like after lodge and the after hours episodes are what happens when you stay at lodge too late after the after hours.
When you shut it down. Yeah.
So basically we just kind of clicked in that respect. And I invited him, yeah, man, I'd love for you to come back. Well, we had a blast. He's funny. I mean, you've heard Joe, he's hysterical. And then what happened, Ken came the next episode and he came as a guest and it was I think it was the Battle of the Masters episode. And, it was probably one of the funnier episodes that we did because, I mean, it was just back and forth. I think that's where the chili cook-off thing came from and the Joe's hatred for chili cook-offs and my hatred. And it just – and once the three of us got together and it was literally me, Ken, and Joe, I knew – I said, this is it.
And did you – like I think a lot of us during the pandemic, if you already weren't podcasting or – out somehow on the internet through virtual meetings or whatnot. Did you experience that spike, guys trying to seek the light, find Freemasonry, find some sort of connection?
During the pandemic?
Yeah.
I've actually seen a decline in listenership when the pandemic was going on because I believe the majority of people who listen to the podcast, they do it in the car. You're not going to listen to our episodes with your kids sitting next to you on the couch. And if you do,
right.
I mean, that's on you.
Right. Cause you are one of the few, I would say even Masonic podcasts, but you get fair warnings. You're like, hey, we are.
Put it right out there. This is not for kids. This is not for the Sunday family drive. Like we talk about guy things and what happens after lodge and all of the, I mean, the male humor, I mean, all that's there.
My other question is the theme song. So I listen to your podcast. I'm a runner, so I'm always looking for something that's in that sweet, you know, 30-minute, hour-long. So I have something to listen to while I'm logging some miles. And your theme song, I'm running, and I'm like, oh, dude, when it kicks up on my Apple podcast rotation, I'm like, did they make this? Where did they find this? This is like 80s rock.
I'm going to show how corny I am right now. There's a movie that Charlie Sheen was in the 80s called The Wraith, where he was a race car driver that had a girlfriend, but another racer wanted his girlfriend and he killed him, but he came back and he's driving this Dodge Turbo Interceptor. And I mean, it's like you probably couldn't even find the movie. It's so horrible. It's just 80s cheesy. But one of the race scenes, that song was playing. And I don't know why. I just love that song. And okay. It's by Lion, and it's called Never Surrender. Now, I don't know whatever happened to Lion. They are nowhere to be found. The lead singer, I think, died, and nobody could tell me who had the rights to the song. So, I mean, it doesn't pop up. Like, so I kind of just put it in there, and I figured, oh, if I get yelled at for stealing copyright, I'll deal with it later. But, I mean, it's not that I'm stealing the song. It's just I like the song, and it kind of where it just stuck, you know. And I went looking. I went and did the right thing and looked to go see who owned it, who I can give ownership to, and pay the money toward. And I couldn't find anybody.
I'm listening to it. I'm like, well, the words are kind of inspiring to, like, never surrender, like Freemasonry, like it really sets up what you're going to get after the song ends as far as the rest of the show. So very cool. You guys have a catalog of over 250 episodes by the time we've recorded this podcast. And I'm sure there have to be moments that you would say, okay, this was my favorite, or maybe like the most memorable episode. I mean, you were throwing out some of the titles, the Battle of the Past Masters. That one cracked me up. The I'll say it, the Shitty Lodge Master Hats, that one made me laugh. The bits you've done on like Google Autofill or Dan Brown has been a reoccurring theme as part of your podcast. Was there an episode or two that just, man, this is what our show is all about? I'll never forget this.
I always make a joke that my ideas just come out of nowhere. They just come out of left field, and I don't know where some of this stuff comes from. It just happens that way. And here in Connecticut, there used to be it's still on the air, but there's a Chaz and AJ morning show, and they used to do shock collar trivia. So I had just randomly come up with the idea of, I went on Amazon and bought a dog shock collar, and I tested it out on myself beforehand and almost shot myself across the room from searing pain to the point of. So we were going to do it, and Joe is deathly afraid of electricity. Long story in that, but so he didn't want to partake. I said, all right, you could be the host and just ask the trivia questions. And we did a first run of it, and it didn't work out too well because I am a Right Worship brother. I know my ritual, so we couldn't do Masonic ritual. So, I mean, we were just answering all the questions right.
Oh, I thought it didn't work out well because you didn't dial it in just right for the shock effect. Yeah.
Oh, no, it was dialed in, because the next part of this story gets even funnier. So there's no doubt that I have a terrible time trying to read big words or words I've never seen before, and I'm infamous for butchering words and names, last names. So I can't remember the name of the episode, but we did a shock collar spelling bee. And it took me a good solid 2 to 3 hours after the show at night I was up to like 2 o'clock in the morning, because the laughter and just being so hyped from that, I think that was my favorite. Because I was trying to spell things, and I had the shock collar, and Joe just, bam, he hit me with that shock collar. And we ended up getting rid of the shock collar for a plethora of reasons why you shouldn't play with a shock collar, include stop your heart. So we decided to do away with that whole bit, but we did do it one time. And that I think that was the hardest I've ever laughed, and the most fun I've ever had was that one.
So does anybody on your show have a background in like broadcasting or like morning radio or television? No. Okay. Gotcha. Because I worked in radio, but I was a country jock, and we would go to these things that were called morning show boot camps, and all the DJs from all the different formats around the country would all get together and share ideas and giant pitch sessions. And I remember the country guys, we all kind of like sat at a certain section, and we would sit there in the rock stations usually were the big morning zoos. And while they were talking about the things that they did, which would be, you know, tickets to give, how they were doing contest giveaways. Like one station talked about Nude with a Dude, where they had guys get naked into a sleeping bag. They'd seal it up, and then they would make them spoon and do various things. And the first person that hopped out of the sleeping bag lost the contest. Right. And we would be sitting here, and we'd just, you know, drop our pencils. And it's like the whole time that they're doing this, we're playing like the latest Dixie Chicks song. Like, like, I can't believe this is so. I'm telling this story because I don't want our listener to think like, oh my gosh, I'm just going to be listening to guy talk. You actually have very deep and esoteric and researched comments and opinions and thoughts. Most recently, I was listening, I was going for a run on your one episode about the human lie detector test. And I can't remember which one of the co-hosts, but the one who's the auto insurance claim adjuster, the way that he inspects a candidate, I literally had to stop because I was on the sidewalk just laughing.
Yeah, we no background in recording, no background in broadcasting or anything like that. Just three idiots with a microphone. And, you know, just we progressed along the way quite well. If you look at us, we basically lived the Masonic podcast life. The first episodes were very EA. It was a mess. It was unorganized and unorthodox. We got a little bit better. And then I think we ultimately perfected what we do now. We're a little bit more mature. We're a little bit more, but my favorite episodes are the ones that we either interview somebody or we just kind of go off on a limb, because I can sit here and read off of Wikipedia all day long. You know what I mean? The ones that you have to actually, for instance, the alternate universe ones. I love those ones because you have to think with your brain. You got to put into it, well, huh, I wonder what would happen if this happened. You know what I mean? Like, or you, how do you fix this? Or how do you fix that? And we're tossing around opinions rather than reading off of a teleprompter or a computer screen, you know? So those are my personal favorites. And I think we give the most out of those because you're talking about it. And, you know, we're looking at the comments as we go live on YouTube and people are chiming in and they're giving us feedback. And, oh, wow, I never thought about that too. You know, like, those are my favorite. And they're the most interactive.
I just have to ask a fun question, but it's also the Masonic jurisdiction question. Most Masonic podcasts have some sort of little disclaimer, like we have one as well, that says their opinions, thoughts, viewpoints, yada, 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 are our own, don't represent any Masonic authority. As a Grand Lodge officer, you're in a different state. as a Right Worshipful of the member of the Grand Lodge of Connecticut, what has been your Grand Lodge reception, or has there been any at all, based on the podcast or any of the stuff you've talked about?
Initially, not so good.
That's so good. Okay.
I'm going to put this, I'm going to try to put this without getting into too much detail, but because I don't like airing out dirty laundry, and you know, it is what. If you're interested to know, the one episode is the Man of Action and Man of Word, is where I really kind of went, the Marine in me came out a little bit on the episode, if you can. But initially they weren't very fond of it. And that's because somebody of higher stature put a bad taste in their mouth about it. And it's funny, I was literally just talking to this with my brother over here. It became kind of an issue of they didn't like the biggest issue was the drinking and the swearing. And I said, okay, have any of you guys ever been to a table lodge before?
Right.
Basically, what a table lodge is drinking, swearing, and having a good time. What are we doing wrong? You tell me. This was after, again, I'm abridging a whole thing, but it kind of, this was after I had sent an email to the Grand Lodge officers and CC'd every single one of them. I was pissed and I was ready. I'll be honest. I was ready to turn in my dues card. I literally took it on my wallet and I they'll be coming for that. And then next thing happened was I got a phone call and we talked about it. And they were going to send they wanted to have a Grand Lodge officer come observe what we did up here. And it actually, we incorporated it into one of our bits and we called Right Worship, our podcast handler. And that became the running joke is that, oh, we don't have our handler here today. So we can swear and say bad things now because our handler is here to yell at us.
Right.
So, and then, after that, that episode we recorded where he was sitting there. And I mean, we were letting him have it. And of course he's in the corner, not on camera. And he's just like sitting like this. And you can just see he's just mouthing swears at us. And then we got off and all done. I'm like, so what'd you think? He goes, you guys are fine. And then that was the end of it. And then what really lended us some credibility big time was when Most Worshipful Mel Johnson came on. He was our past grandmaster, and he came on to the podcast, and we got a great picture of him holding up a Freemasons podcast shirt with all of us signed on it and traded pins, and we had a conversation, and he really legitimized us big time off of the backlash of the initial. So
we had a similar, we didn't have a standards and practices guy from Grand Lodge, but just full disclosure, like my business partner, the other co-founder of CraftsmanOnline.com is now the deputy grand master of the Grand Lodge in New York. So that we've always had to walk this very delicate line. But coming on, having the grand master from your jurisdiction come on is kind of a moment of pride, because I'm sure Connecticut's the same way. You're a pretty large state. It's hard for the grand master to get around. So just meeting him in person is kind of a cool thing. Having him come on the podcast was probably one of the most nervous times that I ever experienced, because it's the grand master. You don't want to say the wrong thing. I can only imagine how the tables must have been turned with the Grandmaster coming on your show going like, oh my God, what are these guys going to ask me? What are they going to do? Where's the shot caller? Where's the shot caller?
Yeah. he was actually really cool. We didn't ask. I mean, we don't ask too many hard questions. And again, I'm not, I don't work for large news media. I'm not going to go out there and joke, put questions to somebody that's going to get them in a jam or say the wrong. I don't do that. And it's really not a real brotherly thing to do. As for having a podcast handler or something like that, I mean, I pretty much regulate myself. And I think me and Joe and Ken, we all regulate ourselves. I mean, we all get on our little tears of getting pissed about something. No, no, George, you can't do that. all right, bang. And I have to swallow it, you know?
Thanks again to our guest this week, Right Worshipful George Mudry, host of the Freemasons podcast. You can find the link to listen to their show in the notes for this episode. Hey, if you enjoy the Craftsman Online podcast, we appreciate you taking a little time to give us some love, share your feedback, or leave us a 5-star review. Just a few seconds on your end helps us big time in connecting with other people searching for Masonic podcasts. Until next time, let peace and harmony prevail.